We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everyone, before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you guys about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ, oh my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh my goodness! I don't believe it!
All right, welcome into another Buzz Beat, your Charlotte Hornets podcast on the Blue Wire Network. This is Richie, and we just got through watching the Hornets defeat the Mavericks 118-99 in Dallas. We'll be discussing this game, some early season trends, and we'll also have some leftover listener questions from a couple of episodes ago. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to welcome a guest, Lee, of the Which Carolina podcast, who I joined, I don't know, was that like a week ago, Lee? I think, or a week and a half ago. Thanks again for joining me last second here. I kind of asked you probably like 30 minutes prior to tip off. So thanks for joining, Lee. And if you want to kind of promote your podcast here right now, and you can, and just kind of let them know what that podcast is all about.
Yeah, Richie, I appreciate you having me on, man. The last minute invite is always welcome. And I was setting up to watch the game anyway. So yeah, Which Carolina podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Which Carolina. That's W-H-I-C-H Carolina. We do NBA, NBA draft, Charlotte Hornets heavy. So I'm a huge fan of the BuzzBeat pod. So to get to join tonight is a blast, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just return the favor here. So we're going to get into the game. We're going to get into some of the early season trends that we're seeing with the Hornets. And we're just going to kick it off as a recap here. Hornets, again, beat Dallas 118-99. And I think we always want to start with Luka Doncic when it comes to the Dallas Mavericks. He was in foul trouble early in this first half. He sat late in the first quarter and didn't re-enter the game until about 7 minutes left in the second quarter. you know, he's the engine for this Mavs offense as they run pick and roll after pick and roll for him. And I thought in the beginning of the game, they were able to find some success, and he was able to swing the ball to the weak side corner for some open teammates. But because of his foul trouble and because of the score, he only played in 24 minutes tonight, Lee. What are your thoughts on Luka so far? I mean, obviously, he's not been a threat from behind the arc.
Yeah, Luka has certainly struggled at the start of the season. Like you kind of alluded to, the Mavericks behind the engine of Luka Doncic was an historically efficient offense last year. They haven't been able to get on the tracks so far in the early season. They have had some personnel change, and obviously Porzingis is still out. But you're right. You know, in that first half, he was able to start kind of zinging the ball around. Maxi Kleber, I think, hit three threes in the first quarter. So they were hurting us from deep a little bit early. I thought PJ did a really nice job in the first half. They were trying to kind of hide Luka on him defensively. To your point, the foul trouble, you know, PJ was able to draw at least one of those on Luka. Anytime he had Luka in the high post or the low post, he was really aggressive, taking the ball to the basket. I thought that was important and probably orchestrated, I would imagine, a little bit from the coaching staff on that kind of offensive strategy standpoint. I think we can put to bed the, you know, is PJ Washington okay vibes. Like he's just fine. So yes, obviously getting Luka in foul trouble, taking the Mavericks out of their offensive rhythm is certainly the blueprint to trying to beat them. And just like we expected, we beat the Nets and the Mavs and lost to the Thunder and the Cavs, right?
Yeah. If you were to ask me that the Hornets were starting 2-2 to start the season, I would have said, yeah, that's perfectly fine. But it would definitely have not have come against the Nets and the Mavericks here. To your point about PJ Washington, he's been a whole lot more aggressive these past couple of games, whether it's on offense, like you said, attacking Luka in the post, or if it's just attacking a loose ball or a rebound. That's the type of stuff that JB wants to see out of these guys. It's just kind of this assertiveness and the urgency to play on both ends of the court. But I think I got to highlight Miles Bridges. There's no reason not to talk about this guy early in this podcast, because he finished the game with 20 points on 67% shooting and 16 rebounds, Lee. 16 rebounds. A couple things that I'm seeing out of him this year, and I even mentioned this on your podcast, just him being a playmaker with the ball in his hands is something that's been a revelation this season. His handles are tighter. You saw in the first quarter two plays that I would want to highlight. He shook Willie Cauley-Stein with the ball in his hands, and then a little bit later in the quarter, he hits a step back three, which is something that you just would not see from him in seasons past. Man, Miles Bridges, to me, was the player of the game. There's a lot of players to highlight, but what are your thoughts so far on Miles Bridges in this game or just early season trends with him?
Yeah, well, just like you said on my pod, I kind of asked you, who are you most interested in the development of? And we talked about Miles Bridges. And now every time I see him make a play with the ball in his hands, I'm like, there it is. You know, he is starting to show more and more of those flashes as a space creator on the ball and as a playmaker on the ball. I also think it's important to highlight how he's embraced, you know, coming off the bench. I know that's an easy thing for, you know, us to say, oh, of course he should be happy coming off the bench, you know, but that's not easy to do, especially when you've been a starter in the past. So I don't think it should be undervalued that Miles Bridges has completely embraced his new role. Him and LaMelo obviously give the second unit playmaking and scoring punch that they just didn't have last season. So the individual improvement is evident. The shooting improvement is clearly evident thus far in the season. Hopefully he can continue that from three-point land. But just his energy, his approach to the game, I think is commendable early in the season thus far.
He's just looking more confident totally on the ball, just more confident in everything that he's doing. And sure, seeing the ball go through the hoop is only going to help that. I don't think, you know, shooting 4 of 6 from behind the arc is going to be sustainable like he did tonight. But, you know, just seeing the ball go through the hoop is something that is great for his development. You love to see him making these steps. And it feels like he's definitely put some work in over the summer because it's paying off in these first four games. He's working on some of those deficiencies. He even hit a sky hook, Lee. I think it was like in the third quarter, maybe, which was crazy to see.
I was just going to say, I think I tweeted something like, you know, just go ahead and mail him the most improved player trophy after that running sky hook through the lane. Because, I mean, if he's doing that, you know, just book it.
Yeah. What can't he do at this point in the season? Right. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria, and you can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. The NBA is back in action and football is heading into the playoffs. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager on than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's Blue Wire, all one word. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Let's talk about LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball had a great stat line in this game. One thing I do want to note with him in terms of defense, I know this is probably not like a sexy thing to talk about. I think that as a defender, you look at him, he's 6'7", he should be better in terms of kind of fighting through ball screens and being a better point of attack defender. But that is something that will be a work in progress. But one thing that I have noticed, whether it's with this Dallas game or just kind of early in the season, he's been getting hands on balls, like deflections. I'm not really sure. I probably should look this up, but I bet you he has a healthy amount of deflections so far this season. And that's only going to help him, you know, obviously build more confidence on the defensive side, but it's only going to help him in transition as well. Playing the way that JB wants to play, and clearly this is something that we're seeing through the first four games, you're going to have to get stops. You're going to have to get steals. Now, they will push the ball off of makes as well, but just a little small observation that I've made, he's been able to get hands in the passing lanes on defense, getting those deflections and turning those into transition looks. And then obviously, you know, tonight, he shot the ball crazy from behind the arc. Every time he shot it, I was just expecting a miss to come sometime soon, but 4 or 5 from deep from LaMelo.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. I think his concerns at the point of attack are going to continue to be there all season and even into the first couple years of his development as a young point guard trying to slide and contain, you know, NBA level creators is going to be a challenge for him. But, you know, that's something he can improve on. Something that's harder to teach is the defensive anticipation that you see from him in the passing lanes. And part of that is totally his length, of course. But another part of it is kind of his ability to see plays before they happen, to rotate in and kind of dig in on a roll guy and make a steal or get out into like into the wing passing lanes and deflect balls, even like blocking some shots from behind when his defender gets by him on smaller point guards. He can use his length to block shots. You know, I think we knew that he was a better catch and shooter than he was an off the dribble shooter, but that's even been highlighted even more to a degree. I mean, coming into this game, you know, to your point, I don't know about the deflections, but he was averaging over a steal a game coming into this game. He was also shooting the ball, 40% from three coming into this game. Wow. Like you said, he was 4 for 5 tonight. So, you know, I think if you could give the Charlotte coaching staff truth serum, I truly believe they would be pretty pleased with his developments thus far. Although, like you said, it's still like meaningful to discuss the fact that he does get back cut at times. You know, he'll fall asleep here and there. He's a rookie. That's going to happen, but it has to be corrected at some point. Mm-hmm. And just as a point of attack defender, that's going to be kind of a constant laborious task for him to just continue to work at and improve. I think he can do it, but it's certainly an uphill development battle for him.
Yeah. And the least that we're seeing from him, he's at least competing on the defensive side of the court. And there was a stretch at the end of the first quarter with LaMelo, which was just awesome to watch. Just go back and watch like the last minute and a half, 2 minutes, and just watch LaMelo. He had a three-pointer. He had at least one steal, maybe two. He had that buzzer beater fadeaway. Like, he was just involved in every little sequence in that last minute and a half to 2 minutes.
And a couple offensive rebounds, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm saying, like, these players are attacking the ball with urgency. And if they're going to try to, you know, whether it's the offensive glass or the defensive glass, if they're going to try to shore up that rebounding disadvantage that they had last year, it's got to be a gang mentality. It's got to be everyone attacking the ball. You know, we see that from Miles Bridges. We see that from Terry Rozier as well. We see it from everybody, regardless of position. One player that always brings the energy and probably why the Hornets brought him back was Biombo. But, like, you look at his stat line, you know, it was a quiet 9 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. Four assists too. That to me is showing me that he has some passing ability, vision. You see him in the short roll. There was a play in the second quarter, about 2 minutes into the quarter, where he sets a pick and roll, catches it, and immediately swings the ball to the weak side for McDaniels, which leads to an and one. I feel like we've seen more of this from Biz this year in terms of the passing.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and it's a little surprising, honestly. Like, I don't know where that comes from exactly. Like, Biz is such a veteran. Like, you would almost think he just is what he is at this point. But for some reason, he has been able to unlock, like, a small amount of enhanced vision, which is kind of baffling to me, but also very pleasantly surprising. I know exactly the play you're talking about with McDaniels. That was a terrific pass. I think more than anything, it's just kind of Biz letting the game come to him. I know that sounds like really cliche, but he's just really not forcing anything. He's taking what the defense gives him. He's moving the ball. He's not trying to do too much. And of course, defensively, he does at least offer like a sliver of rim protection, which the Hornets, you know, desperately need and don't have a ton of. So he's filled in valiantly as Cody's been out, obviously, the last two games. And we're going to be depending on him a lot just because we are so thin in the front court right now. So as the Hornets play, I think it's what, 10 games in the next 16 days, like, it's going to be a load on Biombo, but if anybody can bring the energy every night and kind of fight through, the fatigue, it's certainly good old Biz.
And we can talk about the rotation real quick before we get to some of the other players' performances. It feels like Borrego definitely favors, obviously, you know, Biz right now as the starting center, but he favors going small versus trying to go with Carey Jr. or Nick Richards. He even plays McDaniels at the five sometimes. So I don't know if it's like a trust factor, like he doesn't trust these rookies to kind of come and produce. I think it may be that way. I mean, I just think that with the shortened off season, it's hard to kind of get these guys up to speed, and he just prefers playing smaller. I'm not really sure exactly what's going on there. But think about this, Lee. We had a blowout game. Yep. Who was the only Hornet that did not play tonight?
Blake Mom.
Yeah, that to me speaks a lot. I mean, even Nick Richards and Carey Jr. had a handful of minutes. So I personally feel that it has nothing to do with like the COVID situation. Well, partly, but I don't think moving forward that can be used as an excuse anymore. I truly feel that James Borrego, for better or for worse, however you want to view it, I don't feel like he views him as part of this rotation, which is very interesting to me because we've always heard these comments coming from, not obviously from Borrego, but from Mitch, how he's the most talented player on this roster. So what are your thoughts on the rotation, whether it's the center rotation in terms of Borrego going small all the time? And then also, what are your thoughts on Malik Monk? Do you think that he breaks through in this rotation or not?
So to start with the rotation stuff, I do agree with you on kind of the, I guess it's a guess in a certain way, but like, I just don't think he probably trusts either one of the young centers yet. I'm still actually like fairly bullish on both of them as long-term development prospects. But right now he clearly just wants to go with Biz at the five or PJ at the five. Or like you said, if he wants to get like super creative in a blowout, McDaniels and Bridges were kind of like their quasi four or five there for a stretch. We talked about on my pod how the Hornets need to continue to explore the PJ at the five lineup, but that it actually wasn't all that productive last year. This year so far, in a small sample size, it has been pretty productive, particularly on offense. And this isn't going to be like bona fide math here because I was kind of hand logging it in the game. But in the first half, you know, the Hornets were plus 12 or so with PJ at the five, and they made that run at the end of the first quarter with PJ at the five as well. So I think that is something that is incredibly fascinating to continue to monitor. If the Hornets can kind of mold this small ball five lineup into being a net positive lineup that they can go to consistently, I think that honestly changes the outlook of this team and what they can do. So I guess I say all that to say is so far the PJ at the five small ball lineup has been more productive than it has been last year. Also, I think the flexibility at the wing position and the increased size at the wing position this season allows Borrego the flexibility to not have to depend on those young centers yet. He can trot out a lineup of PJ Washington, Miles Bridges, Gordon Hayward, and then whatever guard rotation you want to throw in there. And you're not giving up that much size because you're so big at the wing with that group. Monk... Man, I've long been a holder of Malik Monk stock. I still think that somewhere in there is a productive NBA player. I've talked about how good he was the month prior to his suspension last season. But there is also the reality that the Martin twins in particular are younger, cheaper, and potentially higher ceiling wings on this roster right now. I think that's part of the reason why Dwayne Bacon isn't on this roster anymore. And it's a numbers game at some point. And right now, Malik Monk is certainly on the outside looking in. It's a long season. I don't think we can completely write off him not getting back into the rotation. I think that's still possible. But right now, it's certainly an uphill battle for him.
Yeah, I just would have thought he would have gotten minutes in this game. I know that, I believe it was yesterday, he did not practice because of migraine issues. I'm assuming those have subsided for tonight's game, but I mean, who knows? It's hard to put my finger on why Borrego. I mean, I love Cody Martin. I love Caleb Martin, but it's hard to put my finger on why Malik Monk has fallen out of favor so quickly with this team. And it can't, like I said, it can't just be because of the COVID situation. Obviously that set him back a week. But at some point that excuse or that reason has got to kind of go out the window. Is it the fact that the Martin twins bring energy on the defensive side of the court and that kind of helps them with their transition game? Like what is it about the Martin twins that give you something that Malik doesn't? I'm assuming that's what it is. That's the only thing that I can kind of point to, because Malik Monk was very good last season. Not even just, you know, that last little stretch before he got suspended. Good playmaker. I feel like he would work well in this offense. Clearly he's a little bit undersized and he might give up something on the defensive end of the court. But I feel like you at least got to try it, right? You at least got to try him this season.
I think so too. Look, I mean, like, I can certainly see both sides of it. I think, you know, I've kind of said, like, if you could combine Caleb and Cody Martin, you'd have a bona fide starting level wing in the NBA. Unfortunately, they are two separate players. You know, yes, they're bigger. Yes, Cody is certainly a better and more versatile defender than Malik Monk. And Malik Monk, as lauded of a shooter as he was coming out of Kentucky, his three-point percentage has decreased every year since he left Lexington. Now, that being said, he had become last year an incredibly efficient downhill rim attacker, right, and even a playmaker. So that doesn't mean that he can't be an efficient offensive player. You know, I like to see him as a primary attack downhill first, find your jump shot secondarily. Man, I think he will get back in the rotation. I think he's too talented to not at least make sure that you're not missing something before you move on from him. You know, if the Hornets do eventually move on from him, I would understand that. But I also think they would be doing a disservice to this team and its ultimate top end potential by not at some point trying to get Malik Monk back in that rotation, because if you could somehow get him back online, that second unit of Ball, Bridges, Monk, mm-hmm. and then start to kind of throw in McDaniels, the Martin twins, whoever it may be, like, that starts to look like a pretty powerful second unit. So I'm pulling from Malik Monk, but I also completely understand the downsides and the kind of rotation that's been solidified with him on the outside looking in.
Yeah. Do you think there's any truth to him maybe having James Johnson run into the Martin twins and have them ejected for this past game so they can get in? That's what
I love that theory. Yeah, he slipped James Johnson, you know, a couple stacks, and just like, hey man, get these guys suspended for a game for me so I can get back in.
Yeah, well, it did not work this game, but that was I totally forgot about that dust up at the end of the game. I do want to talk about a couple more players in this game, and then we can kind of get to our any kind of lasting thoughts for this early season. So sure. Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier, I feel like, are linked together because they are the veterans on this team. They bring the steadiness that you need on a young team. Now, both of these players started off pretty cool. Rozier picked it up. Hayward did not so much, right? I mean, he had a fourth quarter where he hit a couple of mid-range shots, which actually I kind of pointed out. He was getting the Hornets buckets late and kind of calmed things down. I know the lead was, you know, what, like 20 or so, but it just felt like it got a little tense there when they went on like an 11-0 run at one point. So Hayward is a guy that regardless if he is shooting the ball well, which he did not tonight, he's going to offer some other stuff. You know, he did end up with 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and he was still a positive factor for this team regardless of how he shot the ball. And then Terry Rozier continues to play well, you know, rebounding the ball, shooting the ball. He turned things on late. What are you liking about their leadership so far and just kind of that steady presence on the court for this young team?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, you know, Hayward was coming into this game averaging 7 assists. He had 3 tonight. He takes so much of part of that load off of Devontae Graham to have to be the primary playmaker all the time. Obviously, LaMelo Ball, when he's right, does that as well. But Gordon, just as an offensive, like, on the ball calming influence, is so nice to see. He was obviously huge late in the Brooklyn win. Didn't shoot the ball well tonight, and really isn't shooting a blistering pace from 3 on the year. He was 37% coming into this game. I know he missed quite a few threes tonight. So everywhere else on the floor, he's been pretty money. So like you said, even on nights where, and I think it's an encouraging aspect of the Charlotte Hornets offense, mm-hmm. to score 118 points, to shoot 50% from the field, and to shoot 44% from 3 on a night where Gordon Hayward didn't give you a ton offensively. Like, that's good. Terry Rozier continues to just be shoot at a blistering pace. I mean, I continue to not understand any of kind of the Terry Rozier slander that gets thrown out there on Hornets Twitter from time to time. Look, he's not a primary playmaker. He's never going to be a primary playmaker. But if you understand what Terry Rozier is and the value that he does bring as an elite catch and shoot off-ball shooter, as maybe not an elite, but a tough and rugged, serviceable guard defender. And then, like you said, man, he rebounds outside of his size at times, right, too. I mean, there were a couple kind of electric, like, defensive rebounds from Terry Rozier tonight, reaching, you know, above post players and snaring balls away one-handed. So I love what both of those guys bring. And obviously they're kind of bulwarks moving forward if this team is going to be maybe competitive in the East.
Yeah, Rozier has a certain edge to him that you like to see. And he had two early three-pointers in the third quarter, which helped Charlotte start off that third quarter in a 14-0 run. So that was the deciding factor in terms of just kind of expanding that 11-point lead to close to 30 points in the early part of that third quarter, kind of settled things down and kind of put things at ease. Last player I want to talk about, whether it's with the Mavericks game or just kind of early season stuff here, is Devontae Graham. Now, Devontae Graham, it's almost like at times you don't even realize he's out there, right? You don't even realize he's on the court at times. Now, James Borrego did mention either today or yesterday that he's fine with the way that Devontae is playing. He is shooting open shots. They just aren't falling, and he expects those numbers to climb in the coming weeks. Now, he is having to adjust to a different role, a different offense, where he's not handed the keys to this offense and having to run pick and roll after pick and roll. And I think in the long run, this is going to be better for Devontae because he's going to develop a little bit more versatility in his game. He's still going to be a good catch and shoot shooter, and I think that's going to work well within this offense. But he's got to learn some other parts of his game to be a more well-rounded player. There's really nothing of note that I took with, like, I took notes for this game. Literally, his name did not show up once, but I don't think he was necessarily a negative factor by any means.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like counterintuitive, but I agree with you in the fact that I actually think this is a positive for him as a long-term, you know, NBA fringe starter level guard. And yes, it is a little concerning the way he's shooting the ball thus far in the early season, but you're always going to have four or five game stretches where good shooters don't shoot the ball well. So maybe he's just having that four or five game stretch at the beginning of the season. You know, he hit that huge corner three in the Brooklyn game late in the fourth quarter that kind of gave Charlotte the breathing room to withstand the Brooklyn's last little run they had at the end of that game. I was kind of anticipating that huge three late in the Brooklyn game to be the impetus for him having a big game tonight. That didn't, obviously, that's not exactly how it shaked out. Prior to this game, if you looked at the advanced numbers, Charlotte's offense still cratered when Devontae Graham went off the floor. We'll see, you know, how that continues to shake out over the year. And obviously it's a small sample size, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is, even if Devontae isn't shooting the ball at the level we expect him to, he's still really important to the offense from just a continuity standpoint, from a ball movement standpoint, and from a gravity standpoint. Because, look, the opposing teams are obviously aware that he probably hasn't shot the ball well yet, but they still have to guard him because he's proven himself to be a capable catch-and-shoot player over a large sample size last season. So, I'm vaguely worried. I hope he can turn the shooting around, but he's still so important to the offense. And to your point about kind of his long-term development, I think this is actually better for him than having to be constantly shouldered with all of the playmaking load.
And not that many people put stock into this, but he was second on the team in plus minus for tonight's game at plus 20. So, I mean, if you want to put stock into that, you can. So he was the positive when he was on the court. The one thing that I'll point to as a team, not necessarily won this game, but definitely didn't lose this game for them, was their free throw shooting. So I think they might have been last in the NBA heading into this game. They were 17 of 21 from the free throw line, which is 81%. The Mavericks, on the other hand, were 19 of 33. They shot 58%, which, again, that's a big swing there for the Hornets. So that's one trend that we want to see change for the better, and it did tonight against the Mavericks. Lee, I want to talk about, before we get to the Twitter questions, just anything, any observations that you've made so far through these first four games that have been good, bad, just notable in your eyes, and I'll give you mine if it's not yours, I guess is what I'm saying. So anything notable that you want to point out from this Hornets team through the first four games?
Yes, I'm glad you brought up the free throw shooting, because we were last by a pretty large margin, actually. And we shot the ball much better tonight from the free throw line. So I don't anticipate that the Hornets will end up being the worst free throw shooting team in the league. I think the one thing that I'm really watching and trying to decipher if there's a big difference yet, or if it's just a small sample size and we're going to kind of regress back to the mean. Mm-hmm. And that's just like our overall defensive rating and defensive, capabilities, essentially. Because, you know, you look at last year, they were 25th defensive rating, a bottom five defense. Going into this game, they were 16th in the league in defensive rating over, a small sample size, 107 points per 100 possessions. But, like, that's meaningful improvement if it can hold. And obviously tonight was a really good defensive performance. The Mavericks shot 39% from the field, 28% from three. Some of that is just them missing shots, right. But some of that is the Charlotte Hornets making them miss shots. And, it's not like we added any type of elite rim protection. We already talked about LaMelo Ball's flaws on defense, as spectacular as he has been in other avenues of the game. Of course, get Gordon Hayward helps, and the maturation of Miles Bridges and PJ Washington helps on defense. But structurally, there's no massive change from a personnel standpoint for this defense to go from 25th to like middle of the road. And besides the fact of they just seem to be like scrappier and rotating better and running out of tough situations and finding guys and contesting shots. So that's something I'm going to be consistently kind of honed in on. Because if there is any way that somehow the Charlotte Hornets defense can be just even league average, that's a game changer. And that's the play-in tournament team in my eyes,
right.
if they can do that. That's still a big if. And over the next month or two, we're going to find out whether that's an actual improvement or if it was just a good start.
That's a good point. I haven't really thought about that this early in the season, but it does seem like, as Cody Martin said this morning, the team needs to be on a string. They need to be cohesive. They need to be communicating. And that's half the battle with defense, is just having the communication and knowing where everyone should be at any moment in time. And that's only going to come with time and practice and stuff like that. The one early season trend that I kind of want to point out is transition numbers. You're seeing this team push the pace more. It's a pretty obvious, evident, visible thing that you're seeing on the court. Not only are they doing it with more frequency, but they're also doing it with more efficiency as well. And to your point about defense, from last year coming over to this year, not much of a change. One thing that I noted last year, as much as JB stresses, getting to the rim, limiting mid-range shots, and shooting the three-pointer, on the opposite end, they did the opposite. They allowed a lot of shots at the rim. They allowed a lot of three-pointers. So that's got to change. You're seeing them run the players off the three-point line a little bit more through these first four games. So in terms of shot profile, they've got it down correct on the offensive side, and they do again this year. But on the defensive side from last year, I haven't looked at the numbers this year, but last year it was almost like, okay, let's stress getting to the rim. But on the defensive side, they allowed all these rim attempts as well. So, all right, let's get into these Twitter questions, Lee, to wrap up this podcast. And this first Twitter question, Lee, is actually very similar to what you were just talking about. This is from @British_Buzz. For this team to ever be a contender to win a playoff series, it needs to be top 10 or 15 defense. What is the roadmap to achieve that is the question. So we talked about it just now, but I think it really comes down to it. It does come down to personnel, but I also think it comes down to team concepts. Like firstly, defense to me is mostly about effort, right? I think the physical tools are important, but if you lack the motivation or want to, it doesn't matter how long you are or how high you can jump. I think you're seeing that scrappiness, like you're saying, that want to on the defensive side of the court through the first four games. Now, once when you actually have a handful of guys on the team that actually give a damn on defense, it feels like it rubs off on the rest of the team, right? It's contagious. So in terms of this team being a top 10 to 15 defense, can it happen this year? That's something that we're keeping an eye on. I don't know if it will, but the communication, like we just said, and then just it being contagious has to rub off on each other. Do you think this team can get top 15? I know you just mentioned it, but do you think it can get to a top 15 defense this year?
Look, if I had to hedge bets, I would say the Charlotte Hornets are not a top 15 defense this year. I think for the Charlotte Hornets to ever become a top 10 defense, there would have to be some sort of kind of elite personnel change. Like, you just don't really become a top 10 defense without,
right,
you know, super elite defenders, as simple as that sounds. So we know that the Hornets don't have elite rim protection right now. We know that the Hornets do have a small-ish backcourt, although LaMelo Ball, like we've talked about, has injected some size and length into that backcourt. So I think it continues to boil down to more buy-in and more familiarity with Borrego's defensive schemes, concepts. It also boils down, again, to, like a lot of things about this franchise do right now, the ultimate ceilings of PJ Washington and Miles Bridges on the defensive end as well. So if we continue to see improvement from an individual standpoint, from the young core, that's going to help. And if we continue to see a buy-in more and more continuity under Borrego's defensive schemes, that'll help as well. That could get them to a top 20 defense, I think, this year. And that may not sound like much, but going from a bottom five defense to a top 20 defense is a meaningful improvement. And that would be wildly encouraging. So, like I said, that's totally something I'm honed in on and going to keep watching.
Next question comes from @KG61 on Twitter. Which player do you feel like is going to be the most underrated all season? I'm going to let you start this one off. I feel like I know where you're going to go because you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier, but player that's going to be underrated all season is going to be who?
That's a great question. I'll give a more obvious answer just to go off the beaten. Well, I mean, not off the beaten path, but I still think PJ Washington is underrated. Yes. I mean, I know he gets a ton of, you know, he gets a ton of love from Charlotte Hornets centric fan base. I don't think the kind of consensus hive mind of the NBA fan nationwide realizes how good he could be. He's just so versatile. Seeing him tonight be so aggressive with mismatches, and seeing him to continue to improve as a shot maker as well, and even as a little bit as a playmaker, like that's not there yet, but it's starting to show glimpses of. I still think PJ Washington's a little underrated, but I mean, Jalen McDaniels has got to be a little bit underrated right now with his performance tonight.
I thought you were going to go Terry Rozier.
Rozier, yeah. I mean, he's criminally underrated by our own fan base, but that's another rant for another day.
I will choose Bismack Biyombo as someone that could be underrated this season. And he's going to have to step up in Zeller's absence. I mentioned it earlier in the podcast about maybe seeing some flashes of some, you know, short roll passing out of Biz. If he can finish better around the rim compared to previous seasons, and if he can continue to bring the effort and the energy, I think a lot of people know Biz as the guy that can't catch passes, right? Like that's the thing that people think of when they think of Biz, but it feels like he's actually been catching passes this year. So he made this one catch, I think it was either in the third or fourth quarter, where Devontae and him ran a pick and roll and the ball was a little bit behind him and his momentum was taking him towards the basket, still caught it, went up and dunked it. So I will go with Bismack Biyombo as the most underrated player for this season. Last question here at Barre Ifilippo on Twitter. Fringy question here. Richards played much more than carry in garbage time during preseason. Is that because JB feels more confident in Vernon and wanted to test Nick a little bit? Okay, interesting. So I guess what he's saying is he knows what he has in Vernon and they're just trying to figure out what they have in Richards. To be honest with you, I just feel like he doesn't really know what he is confident in with those two players. I don't know why Richards played more than Carey, considering that Carey was a higher draft pick. I can't really pinpoint as to why that decision was made, but I really think that Borrego prefers to go small. He prefers, you know, only really to have Cody Zeller and Bismack Biyombo this year. But with Cody Zeller out, you're probably going to see one of Nick Richards or Vernon Carey. You saw both tonight because it was a blowout. You've watched more college basketball than I do. What this is a different question altogether, but what are your thoughts on Vernon Carey and what are your thoughts on Nick Richards? I feel like you favor Richards a little bit more.
I do slightly favor Richards. I slightly favored him as a 2020 NBA draft prospect, but it wasn't by a massive margin. I think what made me more bullish on Nick Richards was kind of the dirty little secret that he was developing as a jump shooter. I mean, he shot 75% from the free throw line his junior year at Kentucky, and he shot 42% on mid-range jumpers his junior year at Kentucky. He never attempted an entire three in his entire, you know, he didn't attempt a three in his entire Kentucky career, but I thought he was one of those guys that, like, in 2 or 3 years could be shooting corner threes in the NBA and it wouldn't completely shock me. He also was a really good rim roller and a pretty decent rim protector at Kentucky as well. So I just liked the overall package a little bit more, but I had a late round, first round grade on Carey as well. Just because he was such a brute and just a, just kind of a destroyer around the basket on both ends. I agree with you in the sense that I don't think Borrego prefers either one yet, and he's trying to figure out which one is which, because like Filippo pointed out, like Richards was the guy in the preseason that was getting more opportunities. I think that was because generally at the time, Borrego was probably leaning towards Richards. He was probably showing more in practice. But then you see Vernon Carey get the first opportunity tonight in a blowout. So maybe Vernon Carey has started to show a little bit more in practice. I truly just believe that it's a back and forth right now, and those two are battling it out behind the scenes. And we'll see. You know, what'll be interesting is if Biz gets in like early foul trouble in one of these games, and he can't just completely rely on PJ at the five, and he actually needs to give PJ a rest. That'll be the maybe telltale sign of which one's edging which one out when they actually need one of them to compete in a real game.
Yeah, it was hard to judge on this game when you're up by 25, 30 points. Right. So, right. All right, guys, that'll do it for today's episode. If you missed last episode, I was able to interview Ashley Strohline of WCNC Charlotte. So give that a listen. For Lee, I am Richie, and we will see you guys next time, and have a good new year.